escuchas lo mejor de Marta de Baile. Solo por W Radio.
No saben qué invitado les traje el día de hoy. Siempre les he dicho, no importa de qué parte del mundo tengamos que traer a quien tengamos que traer, pero nuestra labor y nuestra misión en este programa es darles a ustedes lo mejor de lo mejor. No importa el país, no importa la nacionalidad, no importa el idioma. Hacemos lo que tengamos que hacer para tener contenidos first class. Y hoy está con nosotros Mo Gaudat. Es exdirector de negocios de Google X. Es un gran orador, gran conferencista, gran ingeniero. Pero les digo una cosa, mucho más importante que todo eso, déjenme decirles que este hombre tiene una historia que lo llevó a escribir un libro impresionante que se llama Solve for Happy. En español es El algoritmo de la felicidad. Y cómo, ahora sí que la felicidad sí es un tema matemático, y de dónde sacó esta increíble historia de vida y esta nueva misión y proyecto en su vida, Mo, porque su historia es impresionante. Welcome to the show, Mo.
Thank you so much.
It is so wonderful to have you.
It's my absolute pleasure.
So this is going to be a tidbit tricky because we'll be speaking in English and then you're going to pause and then I'll translate to Spanish.
Which will
so
be fun.
So on and so forth. You have an amazing story that I'm so happy that you can share with the audience, because part of what we're doing on this show for the last 14 years is precisely giving people tools to have more consciousness, more information, to make better decisions at the end, to be a happier person, to mm-hmm. be a wholer person, mm-hmm. to understand why we think the way we think, why we believe what we believe, and maybe sometimes even question our beliefs and our expectations to become a happier human being.
Absolutely.
So you are a perfect fit.
I hope so. But isn't that what it's all about? I mean, isn't happiness what we're all looking for? And aren't we sometimes losing happiness just because we think the wrong way, or we believe the wrong belief, or we engage in life in a way that doesn't make us happy, and then we wonder why happiness is so hard to find?
Dice, es que justamente de eso se trata, porque les digo que llevamos 14 años en este programa, pues tratando de pensar y repensar lo que pensamos, y tratando de entender y ser más conscientes para acercarnos a ser gente más feliz. Y dice, de eso se trata, de ser más feliz. Y al final, muchas veces, esas creencias, esas expectativas, es lo que justamente nos aleja de la gran misión de vida de cualquier ser humano. Now, tell us your story.
Well, it may appear to be a special story. It's not, actually. I was very successful at a very, very young age. I was born in Egypt. I had almost nothing at all. And then by age 23, I was the happiest person you can meet, even though I had nothing. By age 29, I had everything. Everything that everyone dreams of. The cars, the villa, the beautiful wife, the two beautiful children. And I was miserable. I was unable to find my happiness in any way, and I couldn't live with myself because my unhappiness was making my children unhappy. I could see it in their eyes.
And you were unhappy probably for the same reasons that the majority of the world is unhappy, which is what?
You'll be surprised. We search for happiness in all the things that the modern world tells us will bring us happiness. We search for happiness in, you know, things, in parties, in fun, in travel. But is
in
there,
money.
In money. Is there
in
happy?
Relationships.
Exactly. Is there happiness in any of that? And the funny thing is, the more you search for it in those things, the harder it becomes to actually find it. And so when I became successful, I started to depend on those things to become happy, and the more I did that, the more disappointed I was, because none of them ever worked.
Okay, stop right there. Mm-hmm. Le digo que nos cuente un poco su historia, porque ahorita hay un plot twist, una vuelta impresionante a la historia de Mo. Mo es originalmente egipcio, y dice que a los 23 años no tenía nada, no tenía mucho, estaba empezando la vida, y era la persona más feliz del mundo. Para los 29... él ya tenía todo lo que cualquier ser humano consideraría lo necesario para ser feliz. Dos hijos espectaculares, una esposa divina, un trabajo de muerte. O sea, están escuchando ustedes al director de negocios de Google. Y dijo que al, que a esa edad, teniendo todo, coches, viajes, casas, todo lo que te puedas imaginar, fue la época más infeliz de su vida. Y justamente comentando que siempre tendemos a creer que la felicidad está, cosa que hemos discutido 700 veces, en una mejor chamba, en una mejor relación, en encontrar la pareja de tus sueños, en tener más lana, en tener más cosas, cuando te das cuenta que nada de eso trae la felicidad. And so then.
And so I had to search for happiness the way I could understand. And, you know, of course I respect that there is so much happiness in spirituality, there is so much happiness in meditation and yoga and all of that, but it didn't work for me. For my, you know, executive brain, who is originally an engineer, I wanted to understand, if you want, how the machine works, how we humans operate. Why was I happy at a young age and then became unhappy later? I thought to myself, something broke in the machine. You know, this machine was capable of happiness at a point in time. And so I researched it like an engineer, and then I went back to my wonderful son, who was so wise, so peaceful all his life. And I would ask him, I would say, Ali, I discovered this. Does this make any sense to you? And he would explain it to me like the heart sees it. So I would explain it from the brain, and he would explain it from the heart. And together, we built a model that we called the 675. And that model...
675.
So six things, seven things, and five things.
Okay.
We'll talk about them.
Okay.
And together, we built a model that was... truly, you know, successful. So it doesn't keep you happy all the time, but it brings you back to happiness every time you feel that unhappy feeling that we all feel. You know, I took that model, I used it in my life, I shared it with my friends, and it worked and worked and worked. And then, of course, as you can imagine, life is not always easy. So
Stop right there. Mm-hmm. Dice que una vez que se dio cuenta que no entendía por qué a los 23 estaba feliz, pero a los 29 ya no estaba feliz, cuando a los 29 tenía mucho más que antes. Él, siendo un ingeniero, siendo un ejecutivo, quería verdaderamente entender cómo funcionaba la maquinaria, cómo funcionaba el cerebro humano, por qué pasaba esto. Pero obviamente, siendo ingeniero, desde el punto de vista como mucho más analítico, matemático, racional, es que empezó a investigar qué onda con esto de la felicidad. Y su hijo Ali, que era un niño lleno de paz, todo corazón, de repente él se acercaba con Ali y le pimponeaba ideas, y Ali le daba pues su retroalimentación desde el punto de vista totalmente emocional. Entonces, Mo, el papá, a quien tenemos presente aquí hoy, hablaba desde el punto de vista cerebral, racional, y su hijo le daba feedback desde el punto de vista emocional. Así sacaron un modelo que se llama 675. Y ese modelo, que tiene que ver con 6 cosas, 7 cosas, 5 cosas, de las cuales les vamos a explicar ahorita, las empezó a compartir con toda la gente que conocía. Y se empezó a dar cuenta que este modelo 675, que no se angustien, se los vamos a explicar, empezaba a funcionar. Pero bueno, la vida está llena de sorpresas. Ahora sí que los dejamos con ese pensamiento, los dejamos con esa ecuación y regresamos con Mo Gaudat y Solve for Happy, o el algoritmo de la felicidad, en W Radio.
Lo mejor de Marta de Baile, solo por W Radio.
W Radio.
Hacemos una pausa. Escuchas lo mejor de Marta de Baile, solo por W Radio. Estamos de vuelta.
Estamos de regreso en W Radio y nos quedamos en el algoritmo que resume por qué nos cuesta tanto trabajo ser feliz. Y el algoritmo es que la felicidad es igual o mayor a la diferencia que existe entre la realidad de la vida y tus creencias y expectativas. So, that's where we left everybody. The algorithm of the equation of happiness.
So, I had an incredible pillar in my life. My son was my best friend. I had him at a very young age. We played so much together. We developed things together. We played music together. He taught me so much. Ali was not a usual child. He was so wise that by age 16, I started to find myself saying, when I grow older, I want to become like Ali. And then, unfortunately, in 2014, he was 21 and a half. He went to a hospital with a little bit of pain in his belly, which turned out to be an inflamed appendix, which is a very simple surgical operation. Normally takes a few minutes and it's over. But the surgeons did 5 mistakes in a row. And within 4 hours, the sunshine of my life left. And as you can imagine, you know, if I had cried for the rest of my life, you wouldn't blame me. If you had hugged Ali only once, you would know. But I didn't. Somehow, when Ali left, I found myself writing our model. I 17 days exactly after he left, I wrote down 600 pages in 4 months about all I learned from Ali about happiness, with a very interesting objective: to tell the world, instead of, you know how they say, a life for a life, you know, you take revenge at the doctor or at the hospital or whatever. In my heart, I just didn't think Ali's life was worth a life. Somehow the only thought in my head was Ali's life was worth millions of lives. And instead of taking them, I want to give them. I want to make people happy. Because honestly, if you live unhappy, you're not living. And so I just wrote the book with an objective of making 10 million people happy. And you'll be amazed what happened. The world itself started to help me. In no time at all, this became so much bigger than I expected. You know, and the wish that I had was that people will remember Ali, will love Ali and send him a happy prayer, is now in the tens of millions of people.
Nada más para traducir, la parte medular de esta historia es que su hijo Ali, a quien él tuvo muy joven, tenía 21 años y medio. Y en el 2014 empezó con un dolor en el estómago. Resultó que era una infección en el apéndice. Es una cirugía bastante sencilla. Y entra al quirófano Ali. Los doctores cometen 5 graves errores. Y su hijo, su sol, digamos que ahora sí que su todo, se murió. Y dice que seguramente, digo, cualquier otro papá que nos pueda o mamá que nos esté escuchando, tendría todo el motivo para empezar a llorar y no parar el resto de su vida. Y como dice el dicho, ¿no? De que si, o sea, una vida por una vida, ¿no? O sea, un poco el ojo por ojo, diente por diente. Él tenía la opción de tener un profundo rencor y odio hacia los doctores que cometieron ese error que le quitó la vida a el ser más importante en la vida de Mo. Sin embargo, lo que decidió es, en vez de quitar una vida, es dar vida. Y a los 17 días de la muerte de su hijo, empezó a escribir, y en 4 meses escribió 600 páginas, que es este documento que hoy existe en México, es el algoritmo de la felicidad. Y cómo su misión, la misión de Mo, era darle felicidad a 10 millones de personas en el mundo. Hoy, what is the objective? 1 billion? You said?
So we moved to 1 billion, yeah. So
today, you said 10 million when you started.
Yeah.
Now it's like 40 million.
No, we are way more than 40 million now.
Okay.
Yeah. And we changed the target to 1 billion back in November last year. So okay. Exactly 1 year ago.
O sea, la misión de Mo es que existan 1 billón de personas más felices en el mundo.
Okay. For everybody that's in despair, for everybody that's listening to you, and I just ran into somebody that was listening to the radio show, and he said, what an amazing guy. So for everybody that's listening, that's in despair, that lost their jobs, that lost a loved one, that hates what they do, that is just unhappy with whatever their reality or circumstances are, what would you say?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that to start. We are all sometimes suffering. We're all sometimes subject to harshness in life. I mean, in a very real way, life is harsh sometimes. Some of us lose jobs. Some of us lose loved ones. Some of us, you know, are stressed. It's how it is. It's, you know, if you buy a video game, you know, unfortunately, some enemies are going to shoot at you in the video game. This is how it is. Right? You don't put the controller down and tell yourself, oh, I don't like this game. You try harder. Now, there are 2 things that people need to understand about happiness and the equation. To start, you know, let's take the simple things that make us unhappy. Huh? You were stuck in traffic coming here. You were a few minutes late. And, you know, it's very frustrating. You have people expecting you, and it's very difficult. And you can feel stressed and unhappy. Can I ask you a question? If you had stayed unhappy, the entire way coming here, hit your head against the window of the car 200 times, would that make the rain stop?
No.
Would it make the traffic suddenly clear?
No.
Why do we do it? So I lost Hali. If I had cried for 27 years, would he suddenly come back?
No.
Okay. So the first thing I want people to understand is there is no use in unhappiness. Right? If I could show you how to get rid of it, do you want to get rid of it?
Ay, por favor, we're willing to pay you a...
So the problem is actually some people want to stay unhappy. And this is a big problem.
I see, it's an addiction. It's an addiction.
It's not an addiction. It's a way of sometimes not taking charge of our own lives. It's another way of getting someone to hug us and give us a few taps on the back.
Also, what we've said here, it's about not feeling that you are responsible, that you need to hold yourself accountable.
Exactly. So we're told that happiness happens from, unhappiness happens from outside us. Things make us unhappy. So when they happen, we play the victim. Now, I don't say that for everybody. Some of us have very genuine reasons to be unhappy. You know, if you're in Syria and bombs are landing on your head, or if you're, suffering from a chronic disease and it's painful, right? These are real reasons to be unhappy. But the rain? Are we kidding? You know, but our boss? Your boss is supposed to be unhappy. This is what makes them bosses, right? Now, with that reality, I want people to start by making the commitment that if I can show you how you can be happy, you're actually going to want to be happy.
Okay. Páramo. Le digo, ok, para todos los que ahorita están miserables, por X o Y o ciertas razones, ¿qué onda? Dice, a ver, entiendo perfecto que la vida tiene sus dificultades y que la vida tiene sus durezas. Pues sí, si te sientas a jugar un videojuego, seguramente te van a disparar. Uh-huh. Es un poco lo mismo. Sin embargo, si él nos dijera ahorita que él nos puede enseñar a cómo ser felices, haríamos el compromiso, porque al final, por supuesto que hay gente en la vida que tiene razones para estar profundamente infeliz. La gente que está siendo bombardeada en Siria, o alguien que tiene una enfermedad terminal, o alguien que está pasando por un proceso físico súper doloroso, sin duda alguna. Pero la lluvia, neta, tu jefe... Esa es la chamba. Tu jefe, su chamba es ser insoportable. Por eso son jefes. Pero no es que sean víctimas. No es que seamos víctimas de la vida y de las circunstancias, cosa que ya hemos discutido aquí. Porque eso, y tampoco le digo, es que es una adicción todo el día estarse quejando, inventando madres. Y me dice, no es una adicción. O sea, yo creo que ya es como casi una forma de ser. Y es una forma un poco de lavarte las manos. Porque al final regresamos a otro gran discurso de este programa, que es... El meollo del asunto, cuentavientes. Es delicioso echarle la responsabilidad a alguien más de nuestra infelicidad y todo lo que nos pasa que no es como nosotros esperábamos que fuera. Uh-huh. El tema es la palabra de la cual hablamos hace 2 años en este programa de manera consecutiva. Accountability y sentido de responsabilidad. Entonces, nos invita a todos. Ahora sí que abrazo grupal. Nos comprometemos a que lo que nos va a enseñar ahorita lo vamos a empezar a hacer. Vamos a ser parte de este billón de personas que Mo Gawdat quiere ser feliz. ¿Ok? So, what are you doing with that little machine?
Oh, I'm getting translation because my Spanish is not great.
Really? Yes. How does that work? Is there a person hidden behind a curtain? Hola, tenemos una traductora. So she's saying what you already said, because that's what I'm saying.
Yes, but I'm learning Spanish. I wanted to lie to you and say this is an AI machine.
An automatic digital translator.
Exactly.
Okay, so you have our commitment.
So, two things. One thing is let's understand how the happiness equation works.
Okay.
And we can either stop unhappiness by doing what unhappiness is supposed to tell us to do.
Uh-huh.
Or, number two, we can stop unhappiness by realizing that we're solving the equation wrong and there is no reason to be unhappy. Let's talk about the first one first.
Okay, la primera es... I was so not paying attention. First one is...
You respond to your unhappiness by doing the right things that stops making you unhappy.
Okay, respondes a las cosas que te producen infelicidad, y asumiendo que vas a cambiar tu percepción, o la opción B,
is to realize that you actually have no reason to be unhappy, you're just solving the equation wrong.
Okay, que no tiene ninguna razón por la cual estar infeliz. Simplemente está resolviendo mal la ecuación.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the first one.
Okay, la primera.
Yeah, so you know, unhappiness in this equation basically is just a survival mechanism. Uh-huh. It's your brain looking at the world around it, comparing the events of the world to how it wants life to be, uh-huh, for you to be safe and comfortable. Uh-huh. If it finds that the events of your life are not making you safe and comfortable, what, uh-huh, does your brain do? It alerts you in the form of an emotion. Uh-huh. It makes you have regret, shame, fear, anxiety, all of those negative emotions, uh-huh, stress that make us unhappy. Uh-huh. Okay? In that way, think of your unhappiness just as the fire alarm. Have you ever been in a building or the fire alarm went off? Mm-hmm. It's telling you there is a fire in the building. Mm-hmm. Leave. Mm-hmm. Okay? If you leave, nothing goes wrong. The fire alarm doesn't bother you anymore, mm-hmm, and you don't burn yourself. Mm-hmm. If you take action, mm-hmm, the reason for the alarm stops. Mm-hmm. But if you stay, which is what most people do with unhappiness, we stay.
You're dying. You're, yeah, born into death.
You're giving yourself headaches because, mm-hmm, of the fire alarm, and you're putting yourself at risk. You're not changing anything.
I love that analogy. So, okay, dice, a ver, vamos a traducir. Entonces, a ver, ¿qué pasa que en tu cerebro cuando empieza a registrar que el mundo es una amenaza, que la percepción que tú tenías de cómo iban a ser las cosas son muy diferentes y que estás en riesgo? Porque tu jefe es un perro, porque tu esposo te pinta el cuerno, uh-huh, porque tu hijo no te obedece. O sea, todo eso que es la vida, tu cerebro la registra como una alerta. Este es un ambiente poco saludable de acuerdo a nuestras expectativas. Ajá. Uh-huh. Se dispara una alarma en el cerebro. Es como estar en un edificio donde se dispara la alarma de incendio. Esa alarma, ¿qué hace uno?
Te pone en alerta.
Te pone en alerta y lo que puedes hacer son dos cosas. O agarras, te vas y no solamente ya no te molesta la alarma porque ya no la oyes, porque ya estás lejos, pero te salvaste de quemarte y de morirte. Uh-huh. Pero si esa alarma se dispara y tú te quedas instalado ahí, es como quedarte instalado en una emoción.
Claro.
¿Qué va a pasar? Te vas a quemar y te vas a morir. Y eso es lo que tendemos a hacer. Cuando se dispara la alerta del cerebro de esto no está padre, sale la emoción y ahí nos quedamos instalados. I could even say that when the emotion comes up after the fire alarm, you not only stay there, you grab and hold on to that forever.
And you add to it. You start to add crazy things.
Claro.
Like, you know, your husband is unfaithful is an example you gave, right? Uh-huh. You start by saying he's unfaithful because he doesn't love me, because I'm ugly, because there will never be another man in the world that will ever accept me. Mm-hmm. And you start to build all of that Hollywood drama on top of your head and make yourself miserable. Mm-hmm. And instead, all you should do is you say, do I want to be with this man? If I do, I need to have a conversation that makes sure he's faithful. If he's not faithful, I'm going to find another one, mm-hmm, of the 3.499 billion men out there. Mm-hmm. Right? And you take action. Now you can stay there and tell yourself, I am afraid. Then you're going to suffer. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so the number one path to happiness is if your brain tells you something's wrong, do something about it. Take action.
Tráscatela.
Exactly.
O sea, dice, a ver, el ejemplo que puse yo de la infidelidad, una de dos, o dices, mi marido me está siendo infiel. Normalmente lo que tendemos a hacer es, claro, porque no soy bonita, porque estoy vieja, porque ya no le gusto, porque no me quiere, porque no soy suficiente, y empiezas a construir encima de la emoción que viene de esta alarma. Uh-huh. La gente sana dice, okay, este cuate quiere ser, es infiel. Si me quiero quedar con él, necesito tener una conversación para asegurarme de que va a ser fiel. Y si no es así, bueno, pues necesito moverme y buscar entre los 1.5 billones de hombres en el mundo a alguien más. Punto, se acabó. Si uno quiere ser feliz, uno tiene que escuchar las alarmas del cerebro que te dicen algo aquí no está bien y tomar acción. We say it very beautifully with the saying that we have on the show, which is, if you do not do anything about it, you lose the right to whine.
Exactly.
Isn't that amazing?
It is exactly true.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
If you don't do anything about it, it's never going to change.
Claro.
This is clear.
Claro.
Right?
Okay.
Good.
So that's option one.
The option two is to realize that 99% of the time, your brain is exaggerating a little. So as a matter of fact, 60 to 70% of the adult, of the thoughts in an adult brain are negative. So mm-hmm. this actually is research. Mm-hmm, hmm? Mm-hmm. Is it even possible that 60 to 70% of our life is wrong? Would you be alive if 60 to 70% of every day is wrong? It's not.
No. We love drama.
Yeah. The reason is because your brain is a survival machine. Mm-hmm. It has no benefit in telling you what's going right. Mm-hmm. Your brain is designed to look for what's wrong. So if a tiger shows up, your brain is never going to go like, wow, look at the muscle tone on that animal. It's a beautiful animal. Your brain is going to go, we're all going to die.
Claro. To run. But you know what is amazing? Because we've talked about this on the show 1,000 times. Like when you talk to somebody, to a friend, and you say, hi, what's up? Nothing. Everything is fantastic. Everything's going fine. Everything is great. I'm super happy. End of conversation.
Yeah.
If you call that same person and the person says, no, where can I start? You won't believe what George did to me. How do you mean? I mean, you light up a cigarette, you sit down on the sofa, and that is a 2-hour-long conversation.
Uh-huh.
We know how to connect with drama, with sadness, with tragedy. And I think that our natural habitat, because of what you're saying, our brain is not designed to deal with happiness.
That's exactly the truth. So the truth is you've been given the most valuable machine on the planet. It's like the ultimate speed car of all cars. It can do miracles, but we don't know how to drive.
Claro.
Okay? So our brain is supposed to look for what's wrong until we tell it to look for what's right. And so in my analysis, let's go back to the 675 model. The reason we solve our happiness equation wrong, the reason we're looking for everything that makes us unhappy is because of 6 grand illusions and 7 blind spots.
Espérate. Let me write that down. Yes. Dice que el cerebro no tiene ningún beneficio en estarte diciendo lo que está increíble. El cerebro es una maquinaria de sobrevivencia. La chamba del cerebro es dejarte saber todo lo que está mal. Por eso, el 99% de los adultos, what did you say about 90%, 99% of adults?
60 to 70% of all the thoughts in an adult brain.
Entre el 60 y el 70% de los pensamientos de cualquier cerebro adulto son negativos. Porque ese es para lo que es el cerebro. Entonces, ¿cómo lo entrenas a pensar diferente?
Claro.
Entonces, el modelo 675, ¿es el 675?
Yeah, 675.
675.
Six grand illusions.
6 grandes ilusiones y 7, ¿cómo se dice? Blind spots.
¿Cómo se dice?
Ángulos muertos, como puntos ciegos. Exacto, puntos ciegos. Mm-hmm. Y 7 puntos ciegos.
And so let's talk about those first, the 6 and the 7. The 6 are beliefs that we learned to believe while living in the modern world that are all illusions.
Okay.
So they are, the way we became successful in life is to believe certain things about our ego, to believe certain things about time, to believe things about control, and so on and so forth.
Okay, entonces el primero son las ilusiones, las creencias que tenemos.
Yeah, they are wrong beliefs. If you apply them to your life, you will definitely solve the equation wrong.
Okay.
The 7 blind spots are features of your brain that makes your brain more capable of finding what is wrong. Okay? So they're not mistakes in your brain. They're actually the design of your brain. Your brain wants to look for what's wrong. So it's designed with 7 blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about those because we don't have all the time very quickly. I'll talk about 1 grand illusion that will change everything. The first of the grand illusions is what I call the illusion of thought. Right? We all think all the time. You know how, that little voice in your head that's talking to you all the time? I mean, some of us have one, most of us have many voices at the same time. That little voice, we have a mistake in our belief in the modern world that is actually not shared in most spiritual teachings. We believe that this voice in your head is Martha talking to Martha. Now, I have a couple of questions for you.
Yes.
Now, if your brain is a biological function, and your heart is a biological function, your heart is supposed to pump blood around your body. Do you ever wake up in the morning and say, I am the blood that my heart pumps?
No.
You don't. Do you ever wake up, I'm sorry for the analogy, do you ever wake up and say, I am urine?
No.
Right? So the product of your kidneys is urine. If, you know, no one ever wakes up in the morning and says, I piss, therefore I am. Okay?
Yes.
But we wake up in the morning and we say, I think, therefore I am. We believe that this voice in our head is us talking to us. Now, if it was me talking to me, why would it need to talk? I would understand what I'm saying instinctively. This voice in my head is my brain talking to me. It's a third party. It's like you coming to me and saying, hey, Mo, I believe of in A, B, and C. I can have the right to object. I can have the right to say, I'm not in the mood to speak about this right now. I can have the right to say, oh, I don't think what you're saying is true, right? But when the voice in our head says something, we listen. We obey because we think it's us.
No, because we think it's our inner voice.
Absolutely. It's not at all. It's your brain. It's a biological, it's a 3-pound piece of meat. Seriously, I mean, when you really think about it, some people eat that part when it comes from a sheep or whatever. It's meat. It's like your heart. It's like everything else. It just has a very glorified function of producing thoughts. So we think that this is us. I don't deal with my brain as me at all. I actually call my brain Becky. Uh-huh. Okay? A different person. Uh-huh. And when Becky speaks, I question what Becky tells me. I request that Becky either gives me a useful thought, something I can do, or gives me a joyful thought, something that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I will tell Becky to shut the F mm-hmm. up. It's as simple as that.
Le digo que podríamos hablar horas y horas y horas con él. El libro es El Algoritmo de la Felicidad, de Editorial Diana. Ya está editado en español. Es de Mo Gaudat. I mean, we can go on talking from here to Saturday. But I know you need to go. And I love you for being here.
I am so grateful to be here, and I really hope to come back. I really wish that we can work together to make this the happiest place on earth.
Absolutely. Si quieren seguir todo este movimiento de ser más felices, pero por sobre todas las cosas, de entender que no somos víctimas de nuestra vida, que somos absolutamente responsables y accountable de lo que sucede y cómo lo vivimos, sigan a Mo, que está en @mgaudat. Con W intermedia, o www.solveforhappy.com, igualmente en Facebook, igualmente en Instagram. What I'm saying is inviting everybody to join our movement, to commit to being responsible and accountable of their life, and for stop feeling a victim. Everything is about the way you choose to see and think and believe of what is happening.
And once you learn to be happy, make others happy, make a billion others happy.
I'll give you this saying. This is my present from me to you. Happiness is the obligation we all have to not make everybody else's lives miserable.
Exactly.
Go. Great having you. Mo, go. Mo, go. No, Mo, don't go. Thank you so much for being on the
Love
show.
Yours.
Hacemos una pausa y ya regresamos. No se vayan.
Lo mejor de Marta de Baile, solo por W Radio.
W.
Hacemos una pausa.